Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hey everybody, how's it going? Thanks for joining me this afternoon. I am Oren McIntyre. So, very strange day, but very exciting day. The book, The Total State, How Liberal Democracies Become Tyrannies, is finally out. It's out everywhere. You can, of course, order it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, all kinds of other retailers. It's now officially being delivered for those who had already pre-ordered it, or you can go ahead and get your copy now. It's pretty wild that this exists. I'm somebody who never really expected to write a book, much less have it released from a major publisher. It's an honor. And it's because of you guys. It's because of the audience that has been here, many of you since the very beginning when I was talking and explaining political theory over some games of Magic the Gathering Arena, because I didn't really know what I was doing. You know, I had like 100 subscribers. And so it's been amazing to just see this thing grow and change and all the opportunities that become available and the way that the book has taken shape. And so I just wanted to take a episode today, do a stream today to just celebrate that, to talk to you guys a little bit about the process of how this got done. Thank everybody who has been key to making this happen. Maybe give a little bit of a preview to those who are unfamiliar or want to know more about the book, aren't sure about what it's about. And finally, just take questions from the audience, take questions from you guys, a little bit of ask me anything here as well. I'll do any super chats, but also just general questions. If you want to at me in the chat and I see them, I'll go ahead and answer those as we go along as time permits. So I'm going to dive into all that, guys. Again, just a surreal day. Very excited. Very happy to celebrate it with all of you. But before we dive into it, let me tell you a little bit about today's sponsor. Hey, guys, I'm sure you know that your metabolism is your body's engine. It's how your body turns the food you eat into fuel that keeps you going. Because your metabolism is at the center of everything your body does, optimal metabolic health translates into a bunch of benefits, including easier weight management, improved energy levels, better fitness results, and better sleep. Lumen is the world's first handheld metabolic coach. It's a device that measures your metabolism when you breathe through it. I found it super easy to use. When you wake up in the morning, you just breathe into the Lumen, and the app on your phone will tell you what ratio of carbs versus fat that you're burning. Then it'll give you suggestions on how to tailor your diet to improve your metabolism. I really like that it tracks your shift before and after your workout so you can understand how effective your exercise has been. You can also track all of your macros in the app, and it serves as a great motivator that allows you to see your results and shift your plan to optimize your metabolism. So if you want to take the next step in improving your health, go to lumen.me and use Oren as your promo code to get $100 off your Lumen. That's lumen.me and use Oren at checkout for $100 off. All right, guys. So let's go ahead and dive into a little bit of, I guess, the history of the book and really this channel and everything I'm doing now. So I know many of you have been here from the beginning, but obviously we've added a lot of people since then. So it's always exciting to see people in the chat. It's one of the nice things about the live stream format, the way that this channel has always been structured. I've always done kind of the video essays and I've had the interviews, but I've also always had live streams with you guys. We've always seeing different people showing up, asking questions, commenting, talking with each other. I've actually even had the honor of meeting many of you in person when I've gone to events like the Skildings event, and I've got the Old Glory Club event coming up here in a month or so. And so it's been really great to see people who have been there since the beginning and have been plugged in and are excited, been rooting on everything that's happening. Very cool, absolutely, to have that. But obviously, a lot has happened since then. The channel has grown. I'm on the Blaze now. I've had a much wider audience since that began. So people might not be familiar with, I guess, kind of where this started and how this kicked off. And that really is the story of the book. In many ways, the total state is the story of my political journey. Like a lot of people who probably are listening to this right now, I started as kind of just a normal talk radio conservative. I was always interested in politics as a kid. My parents weren't super political, but I got a hold of a radio when I was like 10 or 11. Started listening to the actual radio. I know it's a wild concept. Today kids are like, oh, you just dial it in with kind of brontosaurus bones. But, you know, I got one of those small little portable radios, and I started listening to the FM first for music. But then I heard the AM, and I heard people talking about sports and stuff because I was really big on baseball at the time. And then I started hearing people talking about politics on the AM band. And I was hooked. Like, I started hearing talk radio, and I listened to Rush Limbaugh, and I listened to Dennis Prager, and I listened to Sean Hannity, and I listened to kind of Glenn Beck and everybody, you know, who was kind of on the radio at the time. And I was very influenced by this. This was my understanding of the political world. And so, you know, I went to college. I ended up getting a political science degree. I focused on political theory in it, but you know, when I came out, there's not a lot of jobs in political theory. And so I ended up working in politics. I worked a little bit in Republican politics and eventually became a journalist. And when I became a journalist, I got hired on as a political reporter just for a local newspaper, you know, nothing big. I wasn't at CNN. I wasn't at Fox News. I wasn't writing for Politico or anything, just, you know, doing the local beat. You know, what's happening with crime in this area? What bills or what new taxes are being passed by the city council or the county commission? You know, not groundbreaking stuff. Sometimes Trump would come to town and the governor would come to town, and I'd get to do a bigger story. You know, we had a hurricane or two, and you know, we got national news attention for that. So it got to do some of those wider stories. But in general, it's just kind of the nuts and bolts of small town politics. And I did a lot of crime. I also did a lot of crime reporting, I should say. I didn't do a lot of crime. I didn't engage in a lot of law breaking, but did a lot of reporting on crime as well. And during that time, I got to see kind of the way that many of these news stories were created and shaped. And that really changed the way that I understood politics, because I saw that people could just lie or completely manipulate the perception that the public had in any given situation about political happenings. And that would completely shift the conversation, the discussion, the frame. The way that you wrote about an event, the way that you presented the facts, even though you might even share most of the facts, you didn't completely lie or make up some of that, would completely change the outcome and the way that people perceive things. And I saw the way that Donald Trump was treated by the media, and I hadn't really cared very much about Donald Trump one way or another up to that point. But when you notice that everyone around you is kind of constantly trying to get this guy, well, not fired because he's elected, he's the president, but they're constantly trying to get him removed from office. They're constantly trying to tell falsehoods about him. They're always casting him in bad light. They're going out of their way to tell terrible stories about him, often which are completely unfounded. They're willing to risk their credibility, which I thought was the entire point of the media, right? Because I was very naive. I was like, well, you know, the media, yeah, there's some bad actors. I'm a conservative. I know that they lie sometimes. But you know, the idea that they would completely throw their credibility out the window just to hurt this, you know, one guy who didn't seem all that important to me in the long run was very confusing. And then everything happened with 2020, and that really blew my mind. You know, I watched everything fall apart. The churches were shut down. We were locked in our homes. There were riots in the streets. And it didn't seem like the restrictions on government, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, all that stuff I had learned about had a significant control or impact on that. And so I started this channel. And when I started this channel, it was really just for me to kind of work through the things that I had learned about, because I was also a teacher. I was a teacher and a journalist. And so basically my skill set is understanding things by explaining. That's really what I do at the end of the day. That's how I process things. And that's how I communicate them to other people. And that's what I'm good at. And so for me to understand kind of what I was learning, I needed to tell other people about it. And a lot of people who are kind of creative in this way will tell you this. You don't really understand something until you can teach it. You don't really understand your thought until you've written it down. Until you've written something out, you haven't organized your thoughts. and you haven't really mastered an idea until you can teach it to someone else. So that's what I wanted to do. And I started, you know, hearing about this guy, Curtis Yarvin, from Dave the Distributist, Dave Greeny. I mainly watched Dave for his other stuff. You see, he was talking to this guy, Sargon of Akkad. See, deep lore for me. I actually first learned about all of this stuff, like this whole online kind of online write bubble. I learned about this because I was working. I needed some part-time money. I wanted to pick up some extra money. And so I had a buddy who did paid moderation for video game companies. So I did some moderation for a couple of video game companies that you would definitely know. They're very big. And one of them was very woke at the time, though I didn't understand that term. And I ran into this discussion of this idea called Gamergate. And they kept complaining about Gamergate on this video game forum where I was closing the threads and everything. And I was like, what is this all about? And I first thing I did when I Googled Gamergate is up popped Sargon of Akkad. And of course, you guys know Sargon today is Carl Benjamin. He's been on this channel multiple times at this point. But he had this discussion with Dave the Distributist. And I learned some stuff from Carl, but really, Dave seemed to actually have a lot of answers that Carl didn't have. Dave seemed to understand a lot about the situation that that even though Carl had a broader understanding than maybe the mainstream media, Dave had an even broader understanding. He was connected to a lot more truths about the situation we are in. And so that's how I ended up listening to Dave, who then led me to Curtis Yarvin, Minchus Mulbug, as he wrote at the time. We did not know Curtis Yarvin's real name when I first learned about this. He was just Minchus Mulbug, the pen name. And that really sent me down a rabbit hole. Of course, Yarvin's thought has been critical to me. I've had him on the show as well. He's a huge influence. But Curtis, well, of course, he's brilliant and well worth your time to read. Really, the most valuable part of Curtis is his ability to pull all these other guys you've never heard of together. And so, you know, whether it starts with James Burnham and his collection of the Machiavellians, Vilfredo Pareto, Gaetano Mosca, Robert Michels, these are all critical figures in understanding, I think, the school of political theory that I talk about in The Total State, but also other thinkers that maybe aren't just in the, you know, in kind of the Machiavellians, just in that Italian elite theory school. Of course, you learn about guys like Bertrand Juvenal, learn about guys like Joseph de Maistre, learn about guys like Carl Schmitt, who I think really help us understand the political situation that we're in. And so as I was doing these book reports, basically, right, I was just reading these books, trying to understand them. I ran into guys like Oswald Spengler, just a lot of guys. And I even revisited some people who were critical to my thought before. Alistair McIntyre, C.S. Lewis. A lot of these guys, I had read them. I had understood some of what they were talking about at the time. But I went ahead and revisited them in the light of many of the things that I was learning about our power and political systems and our cultural problems. And there are even much deeper insights that I didn't understand when I first went through at the time. And so as I was doing all these different book reports and trying to understand what was going on, I went ahead and I went ahead and put these videos online, started inviting different people in to have discussions, mainly because I just wanted to talk to them. It was just an exciting opportunity to speak to like Endeavor or Charlemagne or Dave or all these other people who I'd always wanted to talk to. I was very interested in kind of understanding the ideas that they were exploring. And as I did this, I didn't have any intention to write a book, but my wife kept saying, hey, all those ideas you're talking about, you know, all those things that you talk about in your videos, you should really turn them into a book. Cause I wasn't writing articles at this time. Now I write weekly articles for The Blaze, and you can see many of my ideas develop there, many of the things I talk about there. But at the time, I was not really writing except for just the things I was talking about in the video. And so I went ahead and started weaving them together, really at the time, just writing down a lot of what I had said in the videos, but maybe adding some more, making some more in-depth analysis, upping the level of scholarship a little bit to make sure that I was understanding things correctly. And as I did this, I slowly started to see that there was really a through line in all of this. It wasn't just analyzing power, though that's very helpful, and it's a key part of the book. I certainly spent a lot of time in the book explaining how we should understand power, how it gets applied in the United States. So that is certainly in the book for sure. The core of it is Italian elite theory and its understanding of power. But I understood that there was a wider world at play here. There's a through line in what had developed. It wasn't just that we needed to understand that, you know, the media and academia and all of these other things are working with unelected parts of the state and that democracy doesn't necessarily actually restrict those things. But I started to understand from Bertrand de Juvenal and others, the metaphysics of power actually meant that the state was always growing. It was always seeking to centralize power. And the way that it did that was to break down the bonds of society, to break down the things that held society together in an organic way, the family, the church, the tribe, the wider community, merchant guilds, all these things that exist in a healthy and organic natural society had to be broken down so that the state could go ahead and centralize power. And these large bureaucratic structures that James Burnham talks about in the managerial revolution seek to do exactly that. And so the total state is really expanding on this idea. I mean, more and more people are starting to understand the idea of the deep state, which is very important. That's a great thing. The conservatives are starting to understand that this unelected bureaucracy is a critical part of the power structure. It's not just, oh, I elected the president and he works with the congressman I elected and they all get together and they make laws and that's how my government works. No, actually those laws have to be applied by bureaucracies, and the way that they do that, the ideology that they have and the interests that they have actually impacts the way that all of this works. And increasingly very little amount of the actual business of government involves the making of the laws or the following of the laws. And more is taken out of control of, you know, kind of these elected representatives and handed over to this deep state apparatus. That's all great. That's all a critical part of that. That is part of the total state, to be sure. But it goes well beyond that. It's that the structures of these bureaucracies are not unique to the United States government or the federal branch, but actually they apply to everything. They apply to corporations. They apply to the NGOs in our society. They apply, of course, to financial institutions. They apply to churches. They apply to every single thing in our society. And the structure and organization of society, the way that we have had to alter our society in order to scale up human organization, has really changed who we are and the way that power works, the way that government works, and the direction our society is going. And so in addition to an analysis of power, the total state is also the explanation of the development of these large managerial bureaucracies, the managerial class that operates them, the desire of the managerial class to change human nature in the way that we order ourselves and understand ourselves, the way that it dehumanizes us, it programs us to work in a specific coordinated fashion with the managerial structures that it creates, and why it needs to ultimately globalize those structures, why it's obsessed with tearing down national identities, the identities of people, dissolving those differences and turning us all into one homogenized managerial gray goo. And those are all things that I think are critical to understanding. So the power matters, the analysis matters, but I think it's also critical to understand the structure behind it, the incentives behind it, the way that it orders our society, and very importantly, why I don't think it's sustainable long term, why I think it will come apart, it has to come apart, we're already seeing it come apart, and what to do after that. And so that's kind of the main structure and the story that emerged in the book as I started. And I want to go ahead and thank a lot of people who were involved in this. Of course, I've already mentioned that Dave the Distributist, Charlemagne, Clossington, Anamnesis, though I don't think he still has a YouTube channel anymore. But these were all people who were critical to me understanding at the beginning this kind of neo-reactionary and Italian elite theory set of ideas that were kind of the beginning of my journey on this. So they were all very critical. Of course, I'm very grateful to Academic Agent, who, in addition to, you know, sharing some of those understandings and ideas, also somebody who championed my work very early on, had me on his program, was constantly promoting me on Twitter when he had no reason to do so, and it was no benefit to him. You know, there's a lot of guys like Michael Malice or Paul Joseph Watson, Bronze Age Pervert. There are a lot of guys who had much larger accounts than me on Twitter and started sharing my stuff when I didn't have very many followers. Alex Kashuda was another person who was really championing my work on Twitter when not a lot of people knew who I was or cared. And, you know, obviously I don't always agree with every one of these guys on everything, you know, but the fact that they were willing to go ahead and share out my stuff and thought that, you know, my insights were worthwhile and share me with their audience was, of course, a huge deal. And it really made a difference. I also had a lot of people who invited me on their shows and took a chance on me when I was literally just an icon on a page. You know, when Timcast had me on, my face had never been on anything. I was just a piece of art that my wife had drawn, you know, so that I could have something up when I was talking. And so it was very wild to have them invite me on just out of nowhere. Same thing with Tipping Point when OAN had me on there. Kara invited me on, and she was willing to have me on with just my internet avatar. I was just a thumbnail on a full blown news program, which is pretty funny. This was before Tucker was doing any of this. Of course, Tucker Carlson retweeted me, or I should say not retweeted me, but actually read my tweet on Fox News. So that was a huge thing. I had a lot of people like Michael Knowles and Steve Dace who invited me onto their show when, you know, they're again, no reason to have me on. I was very low profile. So it's just been a lot of people along the way who have kind of helped me. Of course, it's been amazing to, you know, see this channel grow. We had, American Ostracon was kind of my faithful companion for a long time. And then when he got busy, the Prudentialist stepped in, and now the Prudentialist has a burgeoning career himself. So I've got to find new hosts, I guess. But they were great. They were all, you know, always there to help me bounce ideas off of them, and they're willing to contribute and help grow the show. And they were, of course, critical to this. Big thank you to Rad Lib. Steve is a great guy. Steve Carson is just a great guy, and he's also just been very generous with his time. He's been very generous with his willingness to. He went ahead and edited all of my stuff when it was kind of in its raw estate. And if you've ever seen me on Twitter, you know that I misspell and have terrible grammatical errors and formatting errors all the time. And so he was willing to go through and do all of that just out of the kindness of his heart. And so that was an amazing help. Mark and Molly Hemingway were great. They were always giving me advice and encouraging me and sharing things out. Really, when I had no clue what I was doing, I was stepping into a world I had no connections in, no idea what to do. And so that was always amazing. And of course, I want to thank you guys. I would not be here without you. I wouldn't be able to do anything I'm doing without you. 2 years ago, I was teaching like Southern Reconstruction to a bunch of bored high school students. And now I've got a book from a major publisher and a show on the Blaze and just everything else. And it's just wild. And I can't believe it that it's happened. And it only happened because so many of you were willing to, you know, watch and share and, you know, spread everything. And it's really been wild. So, you know, the book is finally here. The long march it took, I guess you could say it's one of those things where in some ways it took many years because I was writing these video essays way back, and much of the book is drawn from the video essays. So you might have heard some of this if you watched the channel, because some of it made it in there. But of course, it's also been refined and fleshed out and brought together into a full book. And so that there's a lot of changes there as well. But you could say that it started years ago when the channel started, but in some ways, really the crunch and the grind of getting the book out has really been in the last year or so. And it's very wild. It's a very strange experience. I never expected to be a professional writer. If you told 12-year-old me that I'd be writing for a living, he would be terrified. He's like, why would you do this yourself? That sounds like torture. And so it's very weird for this to be like a thing, but I love it. I enjoy it. It turns out to be something that I find to be very meaningful and very helpful. And I'm glad that a lot of other people feel the same way. And so it's been very strange. It's also very weird to edit your own stuff. Let me tell you, if you write a book, the worst part is reading your own book like 30 times over and over and over and over and over and over again. You read it and you're what you're writing and you hate it and you delete a bunch of it and you write it again and then you write it again and then you write it again and then you finally publish it like on your Substack or something, and then you edit it again and you edit it again and you add it into a book, and then when it's a book you have to read it again and again, and it's just it's a lot and it can be torturous. But you know, when the volume finally arrives and it's a real thing that people can hold in their hand, and you feel like you kind of collected all of these things you learned and explained them in a way that hopefully helps people to grasp what's going on in kind of our current time, our current year, that's great. And it feels worth it. And so now we're on the media tour, scheduling, you know, there's just a bunch of appearances every day, loads and loads of appearances. So that's exciting, working all of that in, but of course all worth it. Very honored to be able to do it, and very thankful to you guys who have made that that something that I get to do for a living. It's just really amazing. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and take a look. I'll go to the super chats first, guys, but you don't have to super chat. I'll try to answer as many questions as I can before the hour is up here. I'm just going to start with the super chats for ease. But if you can do me a favor, if you're asking a non-super chat question, can you put an @ Oren, can you tag me in it so I know it's a question to me, because it's hard to pick out the questions from the things that people are just saying back and forth to each other. So I do see some people asking questions, but it's hard to track down which ones are for me and which ones are just you guys talking back and forth to each other in chat, unless you give me that @ so I know what's going on there. So I'll start with super chats, and then I'll try to get through people who are directly sending questions that way. All right. Tuttle says, I struggle making time for my ballooning book backlog. This one is going to be cutting in line. Congrats on the publish. Well, thank you very much, man. I have that same struggle. You know, the biggest problem I have right now is I have too many friends who are really good at making content, and I'm just buried in all kinds of good content. There are a lot of really thoughtful people who I get to talk to on a regular basis. Many of them I have the privilege of calling friends. And they put out just these fantastic books and essays and podcasts, and I just can't get through all of it. And I'm still trying to go back and read. Like, I know I need to reread a bunch of stuff. I need to reread Vilfredo Pareto to make sure I understand it better. I need to reread Spengler. So, like, there's just these giant tomes that I need to reread. I'm trying to get through Heidegger right now. I'm trying to get through Being in Time. I had to put that one down because I need to go get, you know, think of some more. I'm giving a speech on Machiavelli here soon. I need to refresh myself and all that. So getting through that book backlog is an absolute slog. So I totally get it. I respect it. If you can't get to my book right away, I completely understand, but I appreciate you making space for it because I know how precious time is. And so very thankful that you were willing to pick it up. Let's see here. Tiny Stupid Demon says, through chapter 5, banger quote so far, when tyranny came, nothing happened. Well, thanks, man. Yeah, I mean, the good news is that the book is not super long. I do have a reputation for being concise, and I tried to keep that in the book. I tried not to be verbose just for the sake of it. I tried not to fill the pages just to fill the pages. And so it's not an overly long book, but I feel like it does a good job of explaining what it attempts to. And so you can probably get through a good chunk of the chapters in a few sittings. And I'm glad you like it so far. That was the biggest turning. The quote he's talking about there is really from the beginning of the book. It's the introduction when I kind of looked at what was happening with the lockdowns and everything, and just saying, hey, you know, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, all this stuff was supposed to save us when this happened. And then nothing happened. And that was the biggest shock. That was kind of the a lot of things could be my red pill moment, I guess. You know, whether it's you know, learning about Gamergate or learning about Curtis Yarvin or all these things. But really, I would just say it's staring at the lockdowns and being like, oh, none of this worked. And now I need to understand what's actually happening, because the things that I believed are not true, and I need to understand what's true. And that really was that turning point. So thanks. I'm glad you're enjoying it so far. Flimplar says, congrats. Well, thank you, man. I really appreciate it. It was good seeing you at the Skildings event last year, and hopefully you'll be at the OGC event here in June. Looking forward to seeing a lot of you there, just like I did last year. Florida Henry says, reading is for old people waiting for your audiobook. Look, yeah, I don't blame you. I read a lot of stuff through audiobooks. So something I do very often is I will listen to something in an audiobook that even though I have the physical copy of it, and then I will go back and make notes through the physical copy. So I'm doing a lot of listening. In fact, I believe it or not, I listened to the open letter for Open-Minded Progressives twice. I listened through the whole thing through one of those terrible, like, computer read, you know, automatic voices. Before Skeptical Waves was doing much better versions of this, I was listening to older, much cruder versions of this. So I'm very familiar. I do a lot of audiobooks because I was in the car or working out or mowing the lawn. And that really helps me get through a large amount of things that I want to read. But I always keep the physical book around if I can, if they exist, so that I'm able to reference things because, you know, you'll be going through it and you'll hear part of an idea. Maybe you'll rewind back to that, but you still want to be able to read it and see it. So maybe it's worth both of them to you. But if not, you can wait for the audiobook. A lot of people have asked me about it. I do know that there will be an audiobook. The way that it works is that they commission an audiobook, and the book has reached a level of sales already where it looks like that's going to happen. So you don't have to worry. It will come eventually, but I just don't have any details on it. Yeah. Will I read it? When will it come out? I can't give you any definitive answers on that yet because it's still in the process. So if you want to read it, if you want to get it for a while, the only way to be able to do that will be print. At some point there will be an audiobook, but I'm not sure when that happens. Cherub Cow says audiobooks are for dinosaurs waiting for you on your hologram data sim projection. Yeah, absolutely, man. I'll be making the hologram tape very soon. You can have the total state read to you with, you know, me pacing around like a professor or something, very manically. Let's see. Alexandra says, thank you for all your big picture streams and killer one-liners. You've inspired a lot of my intellectual exploration. I hope you are the one to narrate the audiobook. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. That's incredibly kind. And yeah, like I said, I might be really, you actually end up having to audition for your own audiobook. It's a very weird thing. Most authors are not well-spoken, and that's fine. That's not their job. I do have a job where I speak for a living, obviously. And so it is very likely that I will read my own audiobook. But that's the reason they make you audition for your own audiobook, is a lot of authors are like, well, I'll just read the audiobook. And then it turns out they can't read their own books at all. So I understand how that process works, but I'm not sure yet. Like I said, what will happen, that's up in the air at the moment. There will be an audiobook, but I don't know if I'll be reading it. I don't know what the timeline will be on that. But I'm very glad that the work was helpful. Like I said, in many ways, I am also the product. I listened to so many of these guys who are formative and to my political journey. And so I know what it's like to be trying to figure this all out. And you're feeling your way against the wall. You're in Plato's cave and all you can see is the, the images cast on the wall, the shadows. So I get it. And I've been there, and I'm just glad that I could be helpful to you in the same way that so many people were helpful to me. Let's see. Jacob Zendel says, just got a notification for Amazon saying that my copy has shipped, should be delivered to Alaska tomorrow. Fantastic, man. I'm really glad to hear that. Glad they were able to get it all the way up to Alaska at a reasonable time. Like I said, it's had the pre-order for a while, so there might be some lag if you're just ordering it now. But many people are getting their copies today or tomorrow, so I'm very glad that's getting to you here. Alexander says, was there something that surprised you the most during the book making process, good and bad? Yes. Like I said, I was surprised at how much you have to reread and re-edit your own work. I thought, like, you know, 2-3 passes at most. No, not even close. It's a brutal slog of going over and over and over and over everything with a fine-tooth comb. You always think that there's one, oh, this is the last cut. No, this is the last edit. No, this is the last edit, I promise. And then your publisher's like, by the way, maybe you should add a chapter here. And by the way, that was great. I'm glad they did. I ended up adding a chapter to the book on Cthulhu and the Total State, talking about conquest laws and the shift of organizations over time. I think that was a really key chapter. I'm glad they suggested adding to it. So editors can be good. They can help you. It's not just them telling you how bad you are at writing. But you know, that is definitely a slog. I was also surprised at how much I felt like the book wrote itself. That was a big surprise for me. I can say I wrote the book. Obviously, like I typed the words on the page. However, in many ways, I felt like the narrative was kind of being assembled by the thing I was reading, and I just had to get it out. Which I now understand as I talk to other people who've written books, that's a pretty common thing, but it's not something I understood at the time. I started writing again as a reporter, and I really only wrote, 500 to 1,000 words at any given time. That's one of the reasons I'm good at tweeting, is because I kind of perfected boiling things down, right? The essence of things. That's why journalists are good at Twitter. That's why all journalists are Twitter junkies. Because it rewards their skill set with a large amount of dopamine, but it doesn't lend itself to larger books. And so I had to learn to expand things into larger narratives, weave them together. And that's still a skill in many ways that I'm learning, but it's something that allowed me to kind of see this book take shape on its own. I did the individual book reports, but then they kind of assembled themselves in a way as I kind of realized the things that were connecting all of these different points in my journey. And really then it was just a matter of me, just typing the words that put it together rather than trying to assemble. My point being is like, I didn't sit down with an outline. I'm like, here are the 10 things that I need to say in my book, The Total State. That's not really what happened. It was a much more organic construction of kind of what came together for this book. Let's see. Bolero 393 says, congrats on the release of the book. Amazon says it's going to be here in a couple hours. Will you autograph mine if you bring it to the OGC event? Absolutely, man. I was actually lucky enough to meet Bolero. He came to the Oxford event that they had. And so I got to meet him there, which was very cool. Or I'm sorry. No, that was Narco Republican. I met Bolero at the last OGC event. The last Skildings event that was in Tennessee. So if you come to the OGC event, and this is true, of course, for anybody, I've had a lot of people ask about signing books. If you would like me to sign a copy, I will be bringing copies to sell at the OGC event, and I will be signing any of the copies that I sell, or if you already have your copy, I'm happy to sign it there. I've had people ask about selling just individual signed copies. I have talked about how to do that with a few different people. I'm not sure if we're going to get that in place for this book, but I will keep people updated. But I will most certainly, I'll be at the OGC event. I will be at the ISI event in August, and I might be at NatCon as well in July. So that'd be like Delaware, Washington, D.C., and Tennessee. So all East Coast, I guess. But if you're near any of those and you want to attend, I'm more than happy to sign there. Still wild that's something anyone wants me to do, but I'm happy to do it. Let's see. Perspicacious Heretic says, looking forward to reading. I've enjoyed your work. Thank you, man. I really appreciate it. You're always in the chat. You're always sending out super chats, and absolutely appreciate you taking the time to read the book. Let's see. Tiny Stupid Dean says, what a short, strange trip it's been. Amazing what can happen if you can just get a few people to read a few old books. I mean, it really is the case, man. I feel like in a lot of ways I'm cheating or speed running something. All this knowledge was already there. It's already before me. In a lot of ways, my book is just a summarization of a lot of these works that, people knew existed out in the ether somewhere, but no one had really pulled together and kind of updated and formalized the connection between them. And so I just got to read a lot of really interesting guys and understand the world around me better and, what was happening in politics better, and then tell people about it. And so that really is, it feels fast because it was fast, because in many ways, a lot of this groundwork was already laid. And so I'm very aware of the fact that I'm very lucky to be in this position in this moment and just, be the beneficiary of a lot of stuff. A lot smarter people have gone over, but I'm happy to take my part at least in being able to kind of carry that torch, pick that up and go that direction. Costas 1983 says, just picked up a digital copy. I'll start reading it after the stream. Good luck. Well, thank you very much, man. I appreciate it. It is out on Kindle as well. So if you would prefer to read it in electronic form rather than in the hardback form, of course, you can go ahead and get it. in the digital. The audiobook, like I said, coming eventually, not out yet, not hasn't been done yet, but you can choose whether you want to do print or digital. You do have that option at the moment. Let's see. Michael Warman says, congratulations. I ordered the Kindle version. Can't wait to begin reading it tonight. Do you think there's any value in Karl Marx's critique of capitalism, commodification of everything, alienating labor? So first, thanks. I really appreciate you picking up the book, of course. When it comes to whether there's value in Karl Marx's critique, obviously, I think that Karl Marx is recognizing a real phenomenon. I think that his understanding about the way that the world has shifted, the way that economic production had shifted, and the impact that it would have on people has some validity to it. In a lot of ways, though, he's really, and people don't think of it this way, but it is the case, he's really just a disciple of Adam Smith. If you look and read, you know, a lot of people don't bother to read The Wealth of Nations or, you know, his book on moral sentiments. And in a lot of ways, they don't understand that really economics and the understanding of what was happening in the world, that was Adam's, that was really him just understanding a phenomenon that was already underway, right? That was already a shift in the Industrial Revolution or what would become, you know, the Industrial Revolution. And Karl Marx is just going further along those lines, right? And so Karl Marx is in many ways noticing some of the problems that were already talked about in The Wealth of Nations. However, he obviously takes this into a very bad direction. He makes this entirely material. He understands this as the only force in the world. He makes kind of material production and economics. And it's, this is always the danger, guys, is trying to make it the grand unifying theory. If you can just understand this, and this of course leads him to horrible conclusions about, you know, the revolutions the proletariat will engage in that actually don't work. His theories end up being disastrous. His theories of, you know, the labor theory of value and all these things is incorrect. He has to rewrite it himself multiple times. His understanding of how this will impact politics ends up being wrong. Turns out late capitalism doesn't collapse into, you know, kind of the socialist utopia that he was hoping for, the communism that he was hoping for. In fact, the only states that end up adopting his theories are ones that don't even go through the capitalistic process. So in many ways, Marx is a disaster. But he does have some critical insights, and there have been Marxists who have taken those insights and expanded them in useful ways. I think the fact that Nick Land and others who eventually became important right-wing thinkers were Marxists beforehand, guys like James Burnham. I don't think that's a mistake. I think that there is some value in understanding some of the critical points made there. But the difference is really understanding that the problem of dissolving traditional societies is one that Marx just says we should accelerate through, instead of understanding that this is a fundamental or break from the kind of the organic life that people really should have. And that's actually the biggest problem. Let's see. Matt Bell says, I'm a big AA fan. For God's sake, don't let him know I gave you a fiver. I will not let AA know that you contributed to the show, that you were supporting the show, man. Don't worry. Though, you know, maybe he can just pay me back with a cigar. You know, that'll be really be the key. Robert Weinsfield says, congratulations, excited to read and buy the book, audiobook, when it comes out. Well, thank you, man. I really appreciate it. You know, I, like I said, I usually get, you know, books in multiple formats, you know, when I'm trying to listen and read as well. So I totally understand that tactic. Michael Robertson says, you should have Skeptical Waves be your audiobook reader as a joke. Congrats, Oren. Yeah, but I would make him do it in his own voice. Like, he can't do it with the computer voice. I would make him actually do it and then just not, you know, not make it clear, be a deep inside joke only for people in the know, right? That he was the one who's actually reading the book there. Eric says, even though you describe the effects of negative things, the fact that you and many others can see it is hopeful. Thanks, Oren. Yeah, guys, a lot of times I, you know, people will call me a black pillar, and, you know, I'm super negative on things. And I always try to explain that's not the case. I think that, you know, that God is good, that Christ is king, that ultimately we have hope for tomorrow because of that. I think that we can live good and productive and meaningful and happy lives, even as the world around us is having difficulty. Look, at least what if you believe in the cyclical view of history, if you think that all people go through civilizational cycles and all civilizations eventually fall, then you have to recognize that, like, at least a fourth of humanity, or maybe a half if you want to include like the rise up at the beginning of civilizations, live in like extremely difficult times. Live at the fall of civilizations or the beginning of civilizations when security is not assured and things are very difficult. And look, like, people still have meaningful lives in half of history. You can't just write off half of history and be like, well, things are materially difficult, or, you know, we're having to go through something that's hard, and so therefore no one can be happy and no one can be healthy and no one can enjoy life and no one can build anything meaningful. I just don't think that's true. And so, you know, even though a lot of times I'm talking about why certain systems don't work or why we need to recognize that certain things are coming apart, ultimately, I hope you understand the only reason I'm doing that is that I'm looking for solutions. I'm looking for understanding. You can't fix the problem until you understand the problem. But the purpose of understanding the problem is not to sit at the bottom and be like, oh, this is terrible. It's the end. It's all over. There's nothing to be done. You're not trying to paralyze people. You're trying to educate them with the knowledge they need to move forward. And I hope that's what I'm doing ultimately. You know, the total state ends on a hopeful note. It ends with me, you know, talking about what I think has to be done and why there's still the possibility of a brighter future, why there's the ability of people to have good communities, to have faith, to have families. And I hope ultimately that's what comes through when people are reading the book. John Morton says, congratulations on the release of the book. It's great to see. And I'll definitely be buying it. Well, thank you very much, man. I appreciate it. Again, just lots of people who have supported throughout. And it's fun to watch so many people win together. Of course, I have a lot of friends in the content creating sphere now. I see a lot of people who, you know, are getting big breaks, getting opportunities, and not all of them in media and content creation. Often, you know, they'll find other things that they always wanted to do that they get the opportunity to do because of, you know, a little bit of what they started doing. But it's just that winning together of community. I see that one of the exciting things about the kind of get together last year in Tennessee was how many organizations had been started, how many groups had been started, how much on the ground change had already occurred in just a year. And I hadn't even been at the first one, so I was just hearing it all secondhand. It'll be even more exciting to go to the Old Glory Club meeting this year and really observe that. And so it's nice to see everyone winning together, a lot of people being encouraged. It's not all just happening in streams and books and content creation. A lot of this is happening in the real world as well. And that's incredibly encouraging. Let's see. Alexandra says, Oren begins his book rollout. Christy Noem most affected. We need to beat Christy Noem. I just want to be clear. I have not killed any of my dogs. If that's not enough for you to buy my book, then I don't know what is. I have not shot any dogs because they disobeyed. I do not think it makes it cool to shoot cool if I shoot my dog. And so hopefully that means I can overtake Christy Noem in book sales. Cherub Cow says, congrats. Are you expecting to discuss the book on other podcasts? Thanks. Yes, I have many, many, many appearances already lined up. So I'm going to be, I was just did with Benjamin Boyce. I just did Jenna Ellis. I'm going to be on Tipping Point on OAN here in a little bit. I'm going to be doing Eric Metaxas and Dinesh D'Souza. AA is having me on his podcast. I've already been on several podcasts talking about the book that are in our circles. I've been on the American Reformer podcast. So I'm going to be all over the place. You'll be sick of hearing me and soon you'll be like, I've already heard about the book 19 times. I don't care about the total state at this point, but you know, you'll see plenty of me. Don't worry. George Hayduke says, ordered at a local shop, which is run by leftists. Even better, man. Well done. I'm glad people are ordering at local bookstores. Look, Amazon numbers are great. Obviously, it drives the algorithm, all this stuff. But the whole point about the total state is we're being driven by algorithms. You know, we're having our humanity stripped away and our ability to create organic communities stripped away by these massive organizations. So while it's great to sell on Amazon and you have to do it, at the same time, if you buy it at a local store, that's fantastic. I'm glad. I hope that that's the case. And obviously, if you can order it from a leftist and make them have to like slide that across the table to you, all the better. Let's see. Trey 50 Daniel says, congrats on the book release, Oren. I may do a review of the book on the Trey's Think Tank channel once I've digested it. Fantastic, guys. If you are doing, by the way, if you have your own podcast or you have your own Substack or something like that, and you do a review of the book, please let me know, you know, tag me on something on Twitter. I'll be happy to share that out. Same thing. If you read the book and you want to leave a review on Twitter, you know, give it the stars, type something out, tell them that you liked it. That makes a big difference as well. So please feel free to do that. And then Van here says, still waiting for another 40K or sci-fi stream with Dave, Morgoth, and Last Things. Congrats on the book. I'll pick it up soon. Thank you, man. That does need to happen. You're like the third person just like today to tell me that I need to do a 40K lore stream with Dave and Morgoth. We threatened that when I did my Dune stream with Dave and Morgoth and Last Things. And that does need to happen. Maybe we can get Sargon, Carl Benjamin for that one too, because he's of course a 40K fanatic. So I don't know. I'll see what we can do. You're right that I need to do that. The people have demanded it, so I will try to do so. Sorry, we took up so much time with the super chats. I didn't expect there to be that many super chats, so I didn't get to any of the other ones. Let me see if I can grab a question or two at least that people tagged me in. I don't want to just do super chats here. Here we go. Kaiser says, Oren McIntyre, I was politically awakened by Jordan Peterson, but he always made a point of lambasting anyone who pointed to power as a goal. Thank you for explaining to me how power works. Well, thank you, man. I appreciate that. I also was influenced by Jordan Peterson quite a bit. His work helped me out in a very difficult time. And I know that he gets a lot of guff. I know that, you know, people say, oh, well, you know, he doesn't talk about this or he doesn't talk about that, or, you know, they have critiques of him. And I get that. But ultimately, I think Jordan Peterson is a force for good. I think he is saying important things. Maybe he isn't always answering all the questions you hope. Maybe he's not focusing on power. Maybe he's wrong about internet anonymity. He is wrong about those things, by the way. However, I still think that his work is meaningful and important. Turtle says, Oren McIntyre, recommend getting Wade Stotz for the audiobook narration. That is good. Audio Wade. Wade Stotz is great. You should be watching The Wade Show, by the way, if you're not. Also, he did the Christian Nashlin book, Stephen Wolf's book. I listened to that on Canon. So I already know that he has the skills. So that's a good recommendation. Let's see. Jackson King asks about media tour, if there's any big stops. I already listed some of them. I'm going to be on, like I said, Dinesh D'Souza's podcast, Eric Metaxas. Already did a few in our own sphere. Might be some bigger ones coming as soon as I hear about those guys. If there's any of the really big ones, I will give you a heads up as soon as I know about them. But at the moment, those are the ones that I have lined up. The whole machine has just started to kick in gear. These things kind of, you know, you do your first batch and then they kind of invite you to the next one and the next one and the next one. So I imagine you'll have to deal with a couple months of me probably going on and on about this. So have no fear. I'm sure it will be showing up on a few podcasts that you're going to enjoy. I'll be on Steve Dace as well. So make sure that you check those out. All right, guys. So going to go ahead and wrap this one up. Thank you once again, everybody, for coming by. Thank you so much for supporting the channel, encouraging me through all of this. I would not have the book. I would not have the channel. I would not have the show. I would not have the platform without your continued and passionate support. And it's been amazing to see. I'm just incredibly grateful. So thank you. Of course, if it's your first time on the channel somehow on this one celebration stream, make sure that you go ahead and subscribe, you know, turn on the notification bells and everything so that you can watch these streams when they go live. Of course, if you're the audiobook guy and you want to make sure that you can listen while you're mowing the lawn or lifting or whatever, make sure that you go ahead and subscribe to the Oren McIntyre Show podcast so you can get the audio versions. And of course, if you would like to go ahead and, you know, watch any of the shows They are all on Blaze TV. That's the best place to catch anything that ends up getting censored. I've had a few things that have been pulled off YouTube, whatnot. So it's always good to have that Blaze TV subscription because you can read my columns when they come out, and you can go ahead and watch any shows that YouTube doesn't want you to see. And, you know, you never know when they're going to hit you with that stuff. So always good to have that backup plan or always have that outlet so that you can see all of the content that I'm putting out. All right, guys, thank you so much for watching. And as always, I will talk to you next time.